Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast. Hey everyone, David Nagel here. Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast. You can send questions in at tsm@davidnagel.com or a voicemail at speakpipe.com/David Nagel. Okay, what I want to talk to you today about, I really want to stress, really want to stress that I take this lesson very seriously with a lot of respect. And I suggest that you do the same thing. I also suggest that this is something that you really put some thought into, because this lesson is one of those lessons where you can learn a skill set that'll completely change your life forever. But in order to do that, you have to come to some realizations about yourself that are downright terrifying, because it's realizations about truth, about the universe, about things that we don't necessarily like to look at in ourselves. But what it does do is it opens the door to the greatest power that we actually have. So I've brought a couple of books with me into the studio today, and I'm going to tell you the names of those books in case you want to get them for yourself. One is Working with the Law by Raymond Halliwell, and the other one is God Works Through Faith by Robert Russell. Both of these books are out of print. So I think Working with the Law has been reprinted, and it's probably out in a PDF on the internet. I'm really not sure about God Works Through Faith, although I have a program. If somebody was interested in actually hearing me teach the entire book, you could just contact our office and we could tell you how you could get that if you were interested in it. But I'm just pulling out a couple of chapters that are really, really powerful, and I want you to just consider what I'm saying and really put some deep thought into it. So in Working with the Law, there's a chapter where Halliwell says, many failures in manifestations are because we do not force our expectation to keep pace with our desire. Very often we desire one thing and expect in our hearts another, which creates confusion. The master said, a house divided cannot stand against itself. So what is really important to understand here is that when we're looking at what we create in our life and we find that we're creating things that we don't want, but we're really not sure what's causing it, because our conscious desire is for something better in our life. What we really need to understand is that there's two parts of our brain working kind of like both together and against each other. You have the conscious and the subconscious mind. The subconscious mind's main job is to keep us alive and to procreate. That's what its main job is. It's been programmed for millions of years to do that very specific thing, while the conscious mind is only like 10,000 years old. So the conscious mind is where we think, where we reason, where we rationalize. It's where we make choices, and it is only as strong as we develop it. The subconscious mind is very strong, and we don't have to do anything to develop that. It has kind of like a supreme power in and of itself to carry out whatever it is that it's programmed with. And it has fundamental programs like life, you know, and reproduction throughout all of nature, all of life itself. So it's an extraordinarily powerful thing. And that's why people have very difficult time changing habits, because once you create a habit, you're programming your subconscious mind with whatever the habit is, and it just carries it out without any conscious decision-making or action on your own. You just automatically do it. It's like driving a car. If you think about all the different things that you have to do to drive a car, You had to learn those and do those over and over again thousands of times, and then they became automatic. Now we don't even think about it anymore. And we're driving a 3,000-pound vehicle at 70 miles an hour down the highway, and we're looking at our phone and listening to music and eating a sandwich and having a conversation with the person next to us and thinking about what we're going to do when we get to the meeting. And we're also paying attention to traffic lights and other vehicles. And, you know, like, it's amazing what we're able to do kind of unconsciously and still move forward throughout the day. So just take this into consideration, that you've got something very powerful that's working inside of yourself that can be opposing what your conscious mind wants to do and wants to change. This is very important, because what I'm trying to explain here is, number one, why you may be having problems creating certain things in your life, and then what do we have to begin to do to consider to change those, right? So this is the part where we're going to start to get into some pretty heady stuff. Next paragraph from Halliwell says this. It says, true desire represents the urge of life seeking a fuller expression and is kept alive by the continuous expectation of its fulfillment. So that's the first half of the paragraph. Now I'm going to break this down for you. True desire is the psychological, intellectual, spiritual side of us that is resonating with life itself and is pulling us. We feel it like emotionally inside our body. It is pulling us toward what we're supposed to be doing in life in the form of desire. So desire is different than like a mere want or a wish. Desire is something that sticks with us. When we really desire something, it doesn't go away. It's like it's there. We know we want it. We're usually having some kind of an internal argument with ourselves around why we can't do it, or if we should do it, or is it right or wrong to do it, or when should we do it, because we've got conflicting information in our mind that kind of like opposes the desire, because it's programmed information from the way other people think we should live our lives. And a lot of times it's just in direct conflict to whatever the desire is. So one of the things that we need to do is we need to kind of work that out in our life. And that's the individual responsibility of every person, to really work that out. It's becoming self-aware. It's learning who you are. It is taking a stand for what you want in life and what you're going to create in life and what your life is going to be about. It's your life. Everybody has the right to do that. So if we're going to do that, and we're also going to feel fulfilled on the inside, plus on top of that contribute to society, we have to follow that desire. But here's the crazy thing about desire. Desire sometimes might look like this. You can't pay your bills. You're kind of struggling in that area. You don't have a great job, or your business isn't doing that fantastic, and you want a Ferrari. Like, you have this crazy desire for a Ferrari. Now, don't get hung up on the idea of the Ferrari here. It can be anything. It could be a house. It could be travel. It could be a great dress. It could be a fantastic, you know, $2,000 pair of heels. It could be absolutely anything. Right? There's no right or wrong with this, as long as it's not hurting somebody, but there's no right or wrong in your desire, and it doesn't always make logical sense. So very often when we find ourselves in a circumstance where the desire does not match the circumstance we're in, we start to create the excuse of, well, when I get there in my business, or when I'm earning enough money, or when I've saved enough money, or when the time is right, then I will fulfill that desire. And we're missing something extremely important when it comes to the desire. Our inner guidance system is always trying to pull us to our purpose. So it's not just about the thing that we want. It's about what we learn about ourselves, and we find out what we're capable of and where it's actually leading us if we actually follow the desire. Now, if we do that unconsciously, then yes, it's just about attaining the thing. And then we spend a whole life just going around attaining things, but we're missing the message that comes with the attainment of that thing, which is kind of what it does, is it's waking us up to our ability to do something. Because let's face it, when we really want something, no matter what it is, we get it, we do it, we find a way. It's when we don't want something or we have tremendous conflict around it that we don't actually do it. So it's very important to understand, like Thomas Troward was pointing out in the Edinburgh and Dory lectures, that truth, our truth, or universal truth, is kind of like the center of town. It doesn't matter which way you approach it from, you still ultimately end up in the center, because the center is the center. Well, we're a center in our own universe. You are a center. I am a center. And that means that we're all points of truth. The truth about us is partially the desire that we experience to move our life forward. But if we don't pay attention to that desire and take action on it, then we end up with the problem of our life being lost or off track or things not quite matching up or feeling right, but we really don't understand why. So let me go to the second part of this paragraph so that I can continue on with this. So I'll read the first part again, then I'll read the second part so it makes sense. True desire represents the urge of life, seeking a fuller expression, and it is kept alive by continuous expectation of its fulfillment. So that means that we have to recognize it, we have to acknowledge it, we have to continually move forward. That keeps the desire alive. Now here's something very important. Make a note of this if you possibly can. It is your responsibility to keep your desire alive, nobody else's. It is your responsibility. It's like watering your own garden, okay? You have to tend to that and take care of it and keep it up and bright and excited and intentionally wanting to move forward. So the second part is that when we do this, it says it brings to us the ways and the means for the manifestation. Well, what brings us the ways and the means? Decision. Decision is the exercise of the greatest power that we have, which is our ability to choose. When we make a decision to do something, and I mean a real decision, not like I'm going to go run every day and then tomorrow morning it's raining and you're like, screw that, I'm not going to go run. This is a decision, no matter what happens, you're going to follow through on it because you're going to keep your word, that kind of a decision. And here's the great thing about this. We've all made decisions like that before. We don't always make decisions like that, but we all have made decisions like that, especially if it was something that was extraordinarily important in your life. So you already know how to do it. But the thing is that you need to do it with this in order for the ways and means that he's talking about here to begin to show up in your life. Because if we're setting a new goal to do something, we don't know how we're going to achieve that goal before we do it. We have to course correct and adjust and adapt and adopt things as we go. But it's when we make the decision and start moving toward the thing that the information for how to actually accomplish that thing begins to come to us. And then we take action on that information. So he says this, that the principle explains that no desire is felt until the supply is ready to appear. And no mind can be conscious of a need or a desire unless the possibility for its fulfillment already exists. Well, what the hell is that supposed to mean, right? What it means is exactly what it says. The moment that you have a desire to be, do, or have anything in your life, that thing that you want to be, do, or have is ready to come into your life. It's like it is seeking you as much as you're seeking it. Here's the part that like confounds so many people, and it did for me in the beginning also. How is it possible, like if I desire to be a millionaire, like I really desire to be a millionaire, but I'm making $20,000 a year, how the hell is it even remotely possible that money, that opportunity, that ability is literally right in my life now? And number one, I don't see it, so I can't even acknowledge it. And number two, I find it extraordinarily difficult to believe that I could be in a situation where I'm earning 20, I've never earned a million, and yet it's here ready to come into my life right now. I get it. Believe me, I get it. it was this experience, this actual experience of something like very similar to this happening in my life that caused me to dive into 7 years of study to figure out how the hell is it possible. So in this half hour here, I'm trying to give you an idea of how that's possible. But here's where it starts to get a little bit tricky, because this is where I see people really struggle with this concept. There's a lot of people that are out there that are teaching this idea now, but rarely will you hear somebody teach what I'm about to tell you. This is the part that's very important that you take very seriously and you take into great consideration for your own life. When we step into wanting something, we always have to remember that there's another law that we have to take into consideration besides the law of cause and effect, which is I have to be the cause of what I want and the effect shows up. It's the law of polarity. And here's where people don't like this law. And the thing is that it's one of those things where you unconsciously are aware that there's something that's not right, but you can't really explain it. You can't really put your finger on it. Whatever we create in our life, now let's say you want to go out and you have a desire for something that's really fantastic. You know, maybe it is the car, maybe it is the house, whatever it might be. And you think to yourself, man, it would be absolutely amazing to be, do, or have that thing. When you bring that thing into your life, you get the amazing part, but you also get the polar opposite of it, which is not amazing. Now, here's the thing. It's different for everything, right? If you have to realize if something is great in your life, it's also terrible in your life. Now, does that mean that it's acting out that way? No, it doesn't mean that. But it definitely has the potential to. So let me give you an example of what I mean by this. If you look at people that want to be celebrities, for the most part, we think, hey, being a celebrity would be pretty cool. You know, I have a lot of people that love and adore me. They like what I do. I'm very popular, probably make a lot of money. I get to travel around and do lots of different cool things, and I'm probably in some form of artistic expression in my life. Let's just define it as that, right? I realize we could go to a lot of different places with this, but let's just use that for the sake of demonstration here. What about the dark side of being a celebrity? And you might say, well, what is the dark side of being a celebrity? Well, if you look at all the people that have become celebrities and met a very tragic end, what we're looking at is a person really not being aware of what also comes along with celebrity. So this is the part where I'm going to try to push your buttons here a little bit to get you to think. You can have celebrities like actors or actresses or rock stars, musicians, whatever. And they start to get really big. There's a couple of interesting things that happens. Well, one, when you start to become a celebrity and you start to become really successful, it gives you more power in life. How you use that power is going to determine the quality of the life that you're actually living. So I think that it's really important to understand that we could use that power to make our life better, or we could use that power to destroy our life. A person like a John Belushi, you know, he became a celebrity really, really fast. Like it happened pretty quick for him. And he was a megastar and used that power to, you know, overindulge in substance abuse, and then eventually it killed him. So there's a lot of different things that can happen there. But then there's something even different. And this is where I see people present a very illogical argument that is based in magical thinking, and it is absolutely not true. That just changing your vibration or your emotional state is going to bring you everything that you want in your life. If that's the case, explain this to me. Explain how Christ was crucified. because I think in literature and in religion and in historical study, most people agree that whether it's archetypal or it's literal, meaning that he's literally the Son of God, or it's an archetypal story, I don't stand on either one. That's not what I'm trying to do here. Whatever you believe is totally cool. We would agree that he's kind of like the epitome of what people should be. He was good. He was loving. He helped individuals. He brought a very positive message to the world. How is it that somebody who's vibrating at that level would then be executed so horribly? So we have to consider this because it presents a damn good argument when you are really looking at what is the potential of what I'm doing. And I think it's extraordinarily irresponsible for other people to say, when something goes wrong in your life, why are you're vibrating wrong? You're practicing the law of attraction wrong in your life. That's why you're creating what it is that you're creating. Because then how do you present this argument about what happened to Christ? So here's where the truth is in this. It's not that if you are a positive person and do good things, you're not going to attract more positive people in your life. That's generally true. You're going to, right? Especially because those are the people you're going to interact with. Those are the people that you notice the most. That's the direction and the focus of your life. But as you become bigger and as you take a stand for something, what you do is you raise yourself above the average. You raise yourself above the mediocre in life. And when you do that, you're seen. In other words, a lot of people see you. So you have to understand this. You're going to have the people that are for you and for your message and for your ideology, whatever it is, they're going to see you. But you're also going to have the people that are against you see you. And the people that are against you are going to attack you, or they could. I shouldn't say they're going to, because that's not 100% true. They could attack you if they find whatever it is that you stand for to be too threatening to their belief system or their way of life. So this is how we have, how do bad things happen to good people? Because the opposite side of the good is the tragedy that exists at the same place. It always has to be there. And it doesn't take much for the needle to flip from the good side to the bad side. In a lot of cases, we're very much in control of that. In some cases, we're not in control of that. We've seen really good people be assassinated all through history because they represented a threat to somebody else's way of life or somebody else's life viewpoint. So how do we actually make the shift ourselves and stand in our power is something that we have to really take into great consideration. And I think that Russell has a couple of paragraphs in God Works Through Faith that just really nails this. As far as what do you need to do as an individual to contemplate this idea in your mind so that you could more accept it as a belief. So here we go. He says, the most powerful thing that you can get is the realization of the truth in the statement, I and the Father are one. Now, I totally understand God Works Through Faith was written in the Christian tradition, but it works through every religion, okay? It's basically this is the idea. We're one with the universe. We're one with the power that created the universe. It is one with us. We have the ability to choose, which gives us the ability to use that power however we want. And if you doubt that, really consider this well. You have somebody like the Christ figure on the good side, but on the bad side, you've got like a Hitler or a Stalin. So on one side, you've got somebody who does amazing things for good. On the opposite side, you have somebody who does quite amazingly horrible things for bad. So So if you really consider how terrible the things were that a Hitler or a Stalin did and how many tens of millions of people died because of them, you realize that that power is there, both for good and for evil, right? So I really don't like playing with the word evil too much because that's for like another lesson. But that's to give you kind of a representation of what I'm talking about here. What allows us to go back and forth is our ability to choose. So we have the ability to play either side of that law. So keep that in mind. All right. So here's the next paragraph, and this is as he's writing the book, he's communicating this to the reader, just to give you a frame of reference. He says, "As I write to you today, it's snowing. There's no argument about it." So in other words, what he's saying is that if you were there in his house, wherever he was, when he was writing this book, it was snowing. He could see it out the window. If you were there, you'd see it out the window. You wouldn't. There would be no argument that it was snowing. Everybody would be agreeable that it's snowing. He says, when you picked up this book to study, there wasn't anything that was in you that doubted that it was a book. So now I'm just stick with me here. If you were to have a book in your hand right now and somebody was to say to you, what is that? And you said, it's a book. And they were like, that's not a book. You'd probably be like, what? What's the matter with you? Like, there would be no doubt in your mind. Somebody couldn't put doubt in your mind that you were holding a book if you were holding a book, because you know what a book is, right? But the important part is that your knowing is so certain that doubt couldn't creep into your mind that you were holding a book. This is where the next part comes in. He says, when you can say to a person with cancer, you haven't any cancer, with the same conviction and realization that you say this is a book, there will be no cancer. Now, I want you to really consider this, because it's the same thing with everything. When you can say I'm wealthy, when you can say that there's a certain amount of money coming into my life, with the same conviction and no doubt, you're going to manifest that in your life. You're not going to manifest it sitting on a couch. I'm not saying that there's no action involved. There absolutely is. But you're going to take the action that is required in order for that to come into your life. And this works with everything. Everything. Everything that you bring into your life right now is because you have no doubt about the fate of those things in your life. If you want to change it, you have to begin to contemplate this much power, that you actually have this much power. And it's my belief, after working with thousands of people for so long, that one of the things that keeps us from this is the idea that we become arrogant, or that we become, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, the idea is that we're not worthy enough. We're not worthy enough to do that. Like, can I really do that? Do I really have that power? Yes, you absolutely do. We're the highest form of life on the planet that we're aware of, and we're the only form of life on the planet that we're aware of that has an intellect with the conscious ability to evaluate and choose and make a decision and create our own world. Everything that you see that was created by human beings first had to be an idea in their mind. We didn't know how to do anything. We had to think of it first and make a decision that was we were going to do it, and we worked it out as we went. But we can't work out something that's not there. So the information to how to do anything, the way to do anything, is already here. You will step into it when you consider what I taught today to be true and real in your life. I promise you it is. So study it with great care and great seriousness, and don't take it as folly, and don't fall into magical thinking. But if you will spend some time really thinking and considering and beginning to use what I taught you today, you'll see your life change in ways you couldn't possibly have imagined were even possible. That I promise you. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.